But we go to the World Series. The Tigers make a move, moving a center fielder to shortstop, a rather unusual move, especially at the time it was done.
That was one of the great strategic moves in World Series history. Mayo Smith was the manager of the Tigers. Mickey Stanley was the center fielder. Mayo wanted to get Al Kaline, who had been injured part of the year, back into the lineup to play in the outfield. So he moved Stanley in to replace Ray Oyler at shortstop. Oyler, a great, great defensive player, but he hit about 130 or 135 and was one of the poorest hitters in baseball history. But Stanley was a great athlete, and he adjusted perfectly. He had a ground ball hit to him early in the first game of the World Series. He relaxed and played a great shortstop. But I can remember going to St. Louis with the Tigers when they opened the World Series in St. Louis. And the night before, I went around and I talked to, I'd say, 15 or 20 so-called experts about that move that was impending. And they all agreed that it was a bad move. Nobody told me that it was a good move. And I didn't think it was either, but it turned out to be a great move and it worked.
Detroit gets down 3-1 to the St. Louis Cardinals. Game 5 sees the series in Detroit, and you had a hand in the opening of that World Series game with the national anthem.
Well, I sure did, and I almost got fired because of that, Bob. What had happened as the resident songwriter there at the ballpark, I was appointed by General Manager President Jim Campbell to pick the anthem singers. And the Saturday game, I picked Margaret Whiting, who was a great ballad singer. She was a daughter of a great songwriter, a niece of another great songwriter, both the Whiting boys from Michigan. And she did a very standard rendition of the national anthem. And the second man I selected was Marvin Gaye from Motown. And it was a little ironic that Mr. Campbell came to me and said, "Now, we're a little concerned that Marvin might make it a little bit too bluesy and too much Motown. We'd like to have a straight rendition. Would you mind asking them to do it that way?" So I did, and Marvin said, "Sure, I'll do it." So he sang it straight. And my third selection was a young man who had been born in Puerto Rico, grew up in the Bronx, New York, and was beginning to get fairly famous. He'd had a big hit on the charts, Come On Light My Fire, and he was playing at Las Vegas. And a friend of mine who'd been in Hollywood in the record business said Jose Feliciano had done a great job of the national anthem at the Greek Theater in California, and he would be a great selection. So I went on the advice of this gentleman, and we got in touch with Feliciano. He said he'd be happy to come. He was playing in Vegas. He took the red eye to Detroit, got in the morning. Ollie McLaughlin, a record producer that was a good friend of mine, and I went out to meet him at the airport. We took him to the hotel. He freshened up, went to the ballpark, and went out to the clubhouses. The guys loved him there. They came out to the little ante room, and he made up a few songs about Al Kaline and Denny McClain and everybody else and sang them. And then he went out into the center field area with his leader dog and his dark glasses, all by himself, and in front of the microphone with his guitar, he rendered the national anthem. And it was sort of a little bluesy anthem, and at that time, I think people thought it was a real departure from the regular anthems of Lucy Monroe and Kate Smith and people like that, and they were a little disturbed about it, but he sang it from the heart, and I thought he did a great job. All of a sudden, the headlines hit the paper about Feliciano and how he had crucified the national anthem. American Legion clubs rose up in anger. They said that they wanted a resolution passed that whoever sang the anthem had to do it straight ahead, completely on the notes and so forth, and that Feliciano was a communist and a traitor to the flag and everything like that. Well, I defended him because I had to. I picked the guy, and it was my responsibility. And the Tigers were pretty good about that. I got a little note from Jim Campbell and John Fetzer saying, "Watch out about your next selection if you ever get the chance to do one." But there were a lot of letters sent in, and they had a picture of Jose on the front page of the New York Times singing the national anthem, and it got to be quite a cause célèbre. But we became great friends, and later on I introduced Feliciano to the young lady that he eventually married and now is living in Connecticut with. They've raised a great family, and he is still singing and playing that great guitar.
Oh,
Robert Merrill version, it wasn't, but it was tame compared to some of the modern-day renditions that we see.
Well, that's a great observation. I think now if you hear the renditions you get almost daily, you'd think that Feliciano's rendition was very tame compared to them.